G'day, podcast listeners from Medical Education. This is Kevin Eva again, coming to you from a gorgeous Vancouver day. And I have the good fortune of speaking with a couple of colleagues who are not only experiencing a great summer in Germany, but they're actually speaking with me on one of their holidays, St. Mary's Assumption Day. And so they've taken some time away from their break to discuss a paper with me that they're going to have published in the October issue of Medical Education entitled Vicarious Learning During Simulations, Is It More Effective Than Hands-On Training? Because there are two of you, I'm just going to ask you to introduce yourselves if you wouldn't mind, and perhaps we could start with Carsten as the first author on the paper.
Yeah, hi Kevin. Thanks you first for inviting us to this interview. My name is Carsten Stegmann. I'm working at the LMU Munich as assistant professor at the chair of educational psychology and educational science. My research topics are mainly on collaborative learning and specific field of medical education there.
Yeah, my name is Matthias Siebig, and I'm a surgeon, and I'm working as a consultant at the University Hospital of LMU in Munich, Germany. And also I'm a medical educator, and I have a master's in medical education, and I'm very happy for the work that can be done with Carsten Stegmann and Professor Frank Fischer of the Department of Psychology.
Actually, that's an interesting place to start, in that many places I go and talk about medical education research, and we talk about the importance of collaboration and finding colleagues in different disciplines who can make it a truly complementary and productive collaboration. How did the group of you across psychology and surgery come to work together?
Well, actually, I was in search of a collaborating partner for something completely different. And I was chatting with Frank Fischer about international collaboration. And at the end of his visit, I talked to him that I'm using simulations in teaching. And then we started something completely new. And this is how Carsten Stegmann came in.
Yeah, right. And I was really fascinated about the possibility to do research in field settings, with the possibility of doing real randomized trials and finding out whether all our theories in psychology work fine in that educational field.
And from what I've read and had the chance to learn from you already, it sounds like a very positive and productive effort. You can almost see in the title, Vicarious Learning During Simulations, and Is It More Effective Than Hands-On Training, that there's a very clearly a psychology and a surgery influence. The simulations are prevalent nowadays in medical education, those sorts of activities, and oftentimes one of the concerns is about feasibility, though, and how much effort and how many resources it takes to run individuals through a simulation center. You've started exploring the benefits of having people observing the interactions rather than just performing them. What led you to believe that that might be as effective as actually getting dirty, so to speak, and engaging in the simulation oneself?
Yeah, right. So the starting point was really that there's really expensive simulations with standardized patients, and it's a huge effort. So we had only 8 simulations per day, and we have about 250 students. So you can imagine how long that course takes over a term. And the idea was to make it more effective and make use of some ideas from psychology, with these ideas that vicarious learning can be similar effective than learning by doing. But what we then found out, this can be really even more effective for some specific learning objectives. That was really also unexpected for us.
The basic idea was to increase the contact time between the student and the standardized patient. You know? Because we hire a standardized patient for 30 minutes and he can teach 2 students during that time.
Right. And so can you describe for our listeners the tasks that are posed to the individuals in both the performance role and the observation role? How do you keep the observers actively engaged in a way that appears to yield the educational benefit for them?
Yeah, so first, the task that is posed to the students is a digital rectal examination. Mm-hmm. It's a full visit. The standardized patients visit the doctor, and it starts with a welcome and ends with a goodbye, and everything in between is simulated. And the role for the examiner is quite clear. So he gets a sheet of paper with some information that there's someone coming with a rectal bleeding and now needs an examination. And the observer got, in the normal situation, just a sheet of paper and information to observe everything what the examiner is doing and to prepare a feedback after the examination. That is the basic scenario. And what we then did was to give the observer an additional collaboration script, we call that. So preparing some details about what should be observed and what is the most important feedback should about. And another script that we gave was a kind of feedback script that explains how to perform during this feedback phase collaboratively. So both learners, the observer and the examiner, got a description how to ask for and give good feedback.
And we haven't talked much about the methodology for this particular study, but you manipulated that as a variable, am I correct?
Right. We had an observation script and a feedback script for this collaborative situation with the examiner and the observer.
Were both equally effective?
So the feedback script was able to increase the quality of the feedback, but it seemed that was not effective enough to really have an effect on the knowledge acquisition afterwards. But the observation script, that was really great, had a positive effect on the vicarious learning, so that on the observational learning, learners with that script learned quite a lot more than learners who learned by doing. And the really interesting part for us was that this script that mainly was only given to the observer had also an effect on the examiner. So during the feedback phase, one learner, the observer, teach more or less the examiner with the relevant knowledge on that simulation.
It raises any number of issues that I wouldn't have necessarily anticipated going into this, in that it sounds as though you have something that the psychologists would call transfer appropriate processing going on, in that how that observer watches the simulation will have an influence on what they're able to do with the information early on. If they're focused on giving feedback, their feedback improves, but they don't learn as much, whereas if they're focused on how the interaction actually takes place and the collaboration script you described, then they do get that benefit. And so it seems to fit very well with what, you know, a lot of current models about active learning and a way to make sure that people aren't just passively standing by. Were these scripts difficult to create for the sorts of clinical scenarios that you're focused on? Does it require a lot of effort? What thought process did you go through to decide how you would get people engaged in the way that you thought was optimal?
Well, one aspect clearly is to draft these collaboration scripts, and then you have a lot of time to do that. And then the serious thing is to organize the students in the semester in such a way that you can do a randomized study where everybody finds its role and has enough time to perform in both roles of an observer and of a performer, so that nobody is really denied the benefit of the teaching setup. And that is quite tricky, but that is also one of the strengths of a big university. Normally, people complain about the hundreds of students.
Right.
But here, you can generate a lot of statistical power. And it's just a matter of planning well in advance.
And I like to underline, if you have a clear idea of what the learners should do, the development of these scripts is rather easy. So for the things that should happen during this examination, we have the experts like Professor Siebeck who exactly know what should happen there and what is important during that examination. And we just put that information into the observation script and gave headlines and fields for comments. So it's just a simple sheet of paper that made this really huge effect. The feedback script is quite similar. It's just you can go easily to the literature and find advice how good feedback should look like. And we just put that in advice to the students in some simple lines on a sheet of paper, and it already affects the quality of feedback. So I like to say, everybody, if you like to improve the processes of your learners, then just give them a clear advice what to do in these kind of scripts. They are really easy to do and can have really huge effects if you give the right advice.
Professor Siebeck said something that was particularly intriguing to me. I can understand the importance of balancing the encounters over the course of a term for both observation and performance for the sake of completing the study that you've just completed. When you actually transition this to educational processes and actually implementing your findings into a curriculum, your results would seem to suggest that, in fact, it doesn't matter, or if anything, it may be a bit better for people to watch other students perform rather than to be scheduled in necessarily to perform oneself. Were students equally happy in both roles, or did they perceive that they were learning more in one role versus another?
I'm not sure if we have tested that question. But let me point out that this question is something that we seriously discussed, if that would be equally effective taken alone. Mm-hmm. But here, we tested both these scripts in an environment where every student who does the observation part first knows that he's going to be challenged as an examiner in the second session.
Yeah? Right, okay.
Yeah. That makes it a bit more complex. Yeah? You have to put it into the perspective of the whole setting consisting of several parts. So anybody is doing it afterwards as an examiner, and they know that in advance. Yeah. So they may be alerted to what is ahead of them, and this is maybe the reason why they are learning so effectively.
Right, and you actually manipulated the order in which people engaged in the vicarious task, right? Some performed and then observed, and others did the opposite. Was that influential?
So we found out that there's not a clear difference between whether you first observe or first examine that situation.
We had a previous article on teaching the rectal exam with standardized patients, Dahl. And it was quite clear that if you test different sequences, that learning is much more effective if you start with the standardized patient and then do the Dahl. But the students prefer the other sequence.
Well, it's a rare and particularly positive situation to be in, where the most beneficial educational strategy appears to be the more feasible one as well. So congratulations on your findings. Maybe I'll just finish by asking the two of you to reflect on where you see this line of research going and what you hope to do next.
One of the things that we are now doing is that we increase the number of observers and give the observers different tasks for the observation. So at the moment we had just one observation script, but the situation is that complex that it's easy to distribute the different aspects for that situation to different learners, and then may even increase the effect of the feedback afterwards for the examiner and for the learners as well. So that we now have groups of four or five who are observing and examining in that simulation situation. So that is something that is currently already in practice.
Mm-hmm. Well, we are in the lucky situation that our dean of students built a simulation hospital where we have semi-transparent mirrors. Now we have an examination room, and one wall is a semi-transparent mirror, and a group of students can observe while inside of the room there is a standardized patient and a student.
Right.
That's one direction. And one more thing is that as a follow-up analysis of the presented study in the paper, we are planning to analyze the performance of the students. So our knowledge test here that we use in the paper is iterative knowledge test. So we ask them, how would you perform in that situation? And then they wrote down what they would do. But actually, that is not real performance. Whether they really would do that in a real situation, it's always an open question. But we have taken some videotaping from the real performance, and we are now analyzing whether the scripts and the whole scenario has real effects on the real performance in another simulation after the learning environment.
Right. It's very interesting work, as I said, and these all sound like important follow-up studies, so I'll look forward to hearing how things progress. I'll just remind our learners at the very end here that I've been speaking with Carsten Stegmann and Matthias Siebeck from Germany, and the paper that we've been discussing, which contains, as always, much more detail than we've been able to discuss here today, is entitled Vicarious Learning During Simulations. Is it more effective than hands-on training? And it will be in the October 2012 issue of Medical Education. Thank you to you both for not only being here, but making time on your holiday. I hope you still have enough time in your evening to go off and enjoy the beer garden and all that Bavaria has to offer.
Okay, thank you, Kevin.
Thank you very much again for the invitation. Mm-hmm.